Is it recording?
Yep.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Political Impact. I'm Kelsey Hickman, your co-host, and I'm joined today
with me, Rishi Gandhi, your co-host as well.
Hi, guys, and happy Monday. I hope you guys have had a really good and productive March week. We've missed you guys, and we're excited to be back. Today, it is a conversation between me and Rishi. We're going to talk about three key political issues of the week: international, national, and local. Rishi, do you want to introduce them?
Yes, definitely. And before we start, I'd like to say sorry to all those siblings in university right now whose siblings are at home with March break because, well, we all have siblings, you know, the reason to that. But definitely the first issue we're going to be talking about in our international point of view is about the Uyghurs in China and how like they are going through a genocide and have been for some time now, and no action has been taken against them by UN or any other country. And it's kind of a forgotten issue. Like, I saw a lot of posts in this like a year ago, but now it's slowly like people don't even know that this is still a thing. It's still existing. And I definitely think it's worth to talk about because it's not over. The fight was never, it's not done.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to national, we're going to talk about the lifting of the masking mandate, how Premier Ford is trying to rid of mandatory masking in businesses and shops, and talk about the controversy around that and whether or not majority of Ontarians agree with the no mask mandate.
And the last thing we're going to be talking about in just the Kitchener-Waterloo area is, well, St. Paddy's Day, which is like a fun topic for today because this week is St. Paddy's week. So we'll get to that.
Yeah, we're going to discuss the history and why St. Patrick's Day is known as a national holiday. So looking forward to talking about that. A little disclaimer, I'm losing my voice currently, so hopefully Rishi can help me out with that, but I hope that it's not too unbearable for everyone as we discuss these topics. I think that the first topic on the religious minority in China is really important, and it's an important human rights discussion that shouldn't go unnoticed. So without further ado, Rishi, do you want to just summarize?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, the Uyghur minority in China was, it's basically a minority in China. And the government recently has put them in internment camps type thing, basically. The same that with Canadian history we've done with Japanese during World War. The same thing's happening to them, but the difference is they have done nothing. And there is no ongoing issue against this community, yet they're being targeted for, well, in our eyes we would say no reason, but the Chinese government clearly has a different political agenda in mind, which we need to keep in touch, because with recent years more and more evidence has come to light against these political atrocities against these Uyghur Chinese group, and they have been accounts of forced labor, torture, death, disappearances, and removal of children from parents. And as a country who has kind of supported the children, getting rid of the children from parents with residential schools, I think we know a little bit about how that feels in terms of our history as a country.
Yeah, it definitely feels like an ethnic cleansing. Under President Jing, increasingly is emphasized on non-religious and separation between church and state. So an emphasis on atheism, but has induced it forcible way in China, especially when it comes to these people. So in the Guardian article that we're referring to, it says, quote, "The genocide conviction places a duty on the state to prevent genocide. We are not supposed to wait until it takes place," end quote.
Yeah, definitely. And see, I know for some people who might be out there kind of thinking, yeah, but what is the proof? Isn't it just their words against the governments? Who's right? But the truth is actually in this article. In 2020, the Jamestown Foundation, they kind of released a report analyzing the Chinese government documents, including family planning records, which showed that between 2015 and 2018, forced sterilizations and abortions decreased the birth rate in two of the largest Uyghur prefectures by 84%. And we might ask, right, like, why don't they have a say? Well, like, what can they do? And it's because they are being tortured. Their families are being killed, tortured. And all of this is just a major ethnic cleansing to really, I guess, bring out what, like, their own political agenda, which is obviously not okay. But this is not a recent phenomenon. That's something that I'm trying to emphasize, especially today, is that this is not recent. Everyone stands up when there's a new ongoing issue, but we need to understand that this issue, it started, like, from my memory, I saw a lot of Instagram posts about this at least 2 years ago. And if I'm not wrong, the issue started at least 6 months before the postings. And nothing's changing, right? But we've seen that people have talked about it less and less and less. And I guess that can really get us thinking as to how much power do we have in our voice?
Right. Yeah. And you have to ask that the international community since World War II has built a structure to prevent or to attempt to prevent international catastrophes like so, ethnic genocide, racial genocides. Yet we continue to see a lot of different conflicts or genocides of this sort. So what makes it, I think of Rwanda, Myanmar, what makes it different? What makes this acceptable to the West? And not that it's acceptable, I shouldn't say that, but maybe it's being bypassed. It's not being almost as if it's, it's not our issue. Hands off. But that's not what the international community is supposed to do, right? But without enforcement, we don't have necessarily all of the right power or tools in the international dynamic to stop such a country like China get rid of their Muslim minority group.
Exactly. And I think the biggest reason is imports, exports, and just, I guess, the way
our
communities are shaped. We are dependent on China. Like with Russia, we kind of made our economic thing. Like we stopped exporting there. We stopped imports from there. And that's okay. But we can't do that. These Western countries like America, Canada, we can't do that because we rely heavily on China's imports and exports. And if we get rid of them, then we will be the ones facing a bigger economic loss than they will. Because all the factories, all the machines, they're mostly there in comparison. So if we look at if we even try to, I guess, kind of isolate them in terms of money, I don't think this would be an effective technique, especially for China, because they're one of the up and coming leaders in this entire, I guess, economy. And because they're one of the strongest countries, like they're turning into that superpower that, like, we always view, I guess, Russia and America as like a superpower. I think China's head in that very, very direction really, really fast to turn into a superpower. And it's the same thing, right? Like, I personally think that, yeah, these countries, like, once a country gets too powerful, there's very little say that other countries have for change, in my opinion. Because, like, even if America was doing something tomorrow, There was very little that, like, we as Canada can do. We can definitely stand up, get our voices together, mm-hmm. do our best in the international community. But we also got to realize that they are one of the biggest leaders in the international community, which means they have more sway and more pull. So for any, I guess, consequences, they're kind of already there, which right. makes it a little harder.
So when we think about international institutions that would deal with some sort of something like this, it would be the United Nations. Just for reference, let's break it down. The United Nations defines genocide in broken into five parts: killing members of a specific group, causing seriously bodily harm or mental harm, imposing measures to prevent births, forcibly transferring children from one group to another, and creating conditions to destroy the group. these criteria distinguish genocide from a cultural genocide, which is the eradication of language, religion, and cultural practices of a group that are outlawed. So it, reading from The Guardian, we do know that there's been an increase in the Muslim minorities' abortion rates in China, which would be categorized under imposing measures to prevent births. But it does seem that there is more of a cultural genocide going on with the eradication of the religion and cultural practices and traditions of the Uyghur people. So maybe that definition to be specified is what's causing the international community not to act or to maybe use it as a loophole of not to act. What do you think?
I definitely agree, but I also think like the UN structure has a big deal to do with this because mm-hmm. it's made up of 5 members. And of those 5, China is one of them, right? It's yeah. China, France, Russia, UK, and US.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think of that, like, three of the countries, they are superpowers. Like, and especially when they control kind of like that governing thing of whether action should be taken in a place or not, or what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of really, you can say, like I think, like I definitely agree with you, but I also think that the way the UN is, I guess, based on, because mm-hmm. these 5 countries, they're powerful than any other country. Like a lot of countries are in the UN, but these countries have the veto power, which means if they disagree with something, they can. Only one country needs to be able to say veto, and that's it's gone. Whatever idea, whatever change they're trying to do, it's gone. And I think that's also a big thing because the structure of the organization itself really makes a question of how effective the UN is, especially in national crisis in these 5 sovereign states.
Right. Well, we do have to, I mean, it's similar to what we were talking about with Russia and Ukraine, right? There's a huge emphasis on state sovereignty and individuality of each state in the international community, which means like we in lesser terms, we can't step on one another's toes unless absolutely necessary. So it's a slippery slope. It's the international community trying to protect individuals within the entire world, but it's also protection of themselves and not allowing other states' ideologies and other states' idea of what is just and right to Definitely. Infiltrate them. It's difficult because there's so many different ways to rule the world, and obviously there's very different
that's definitely true, especially with international conflict. I guess politics has a lot of bigger sway than just right and wrong, because mm-hmm. with politics there is no black and white, it's gray, everything is gray,
right?
And that kind of makes it a little harder to differentiate and how much countries are willing to act, because no country will be willing to give up their own, I guess, safety.
Right.
Or the, I guess, protection of any other country, which you might seem like a little ethical dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that they're keeping the best interest of their countries first, which as a political leader, we would kind of want them to.
Well, yeah, you have to. If that's what everyone else is doing, you have to.
Exactly. You can't give a country a reason to isolate you in the world. And especially, like I said, these 5 countries, they have that power too, which yeah. is why I can definitely, you're right. Like, you don't want to step on each other's toes. You want to kind of want to steer clear of each other.
Right.
It's easy to make change in smaller countries, developing countries, but with countries that are already like.
But we're keeping tabs on them. And I think that, the conclusion of this is that I know we keep emphasizing this is not a new issue. It's something that, there's 2 to 3 million Muslim prisoners in China currently. but it's not new, but it's not being ignored by the international community. I can promise you that. It's definitely being monitored. It's more complicated to find a solution than, okay, stop them. It's way more intricate. Every country's intertwined financially, politically. So it's definitely a more complex issue to solve than just telling them no and putting them in a timeout. You know, it's not kindergarten.
And I think COVID kind of changed the agenda on action as well a little.
Right.
Because COVID, most countries were, again, same thing, right? They're looking out for their people first. They're looking out for their best interest. And I kind of think...
We saw a huge switch in trade during COVID, right? And forcibly putting your country first for product lines and economically. So that COVID definitely backtracked us or took us a step back from globalization.
Especially
we don't want to be so interdependent on each other when we physically can't be.
Exactly. And especially speaking from a business point of view, where our economy has gone up 5% in terms of inflation, mm-hmm. which our goal is always to keep at 2%, which mm-hmm. obviously the Bank of Canada is trying to implement change as they released their recent report. But it kind of shows like all of these economic changes that have been happening, like all of these things kind of have countries a little, I guess, backtracked on international issues. Like unless we're comparing the Russia and Ukraine, because like it was kind of a little out of the blue, like we knew they had conflict, but them just actually attacking them was mm-hmm. kind of out of the blue. I'm pretty sure no country had that expectation that it would happen. Some countries have difficult times dealing with others, and that's fair, right? In international conflict, but mm-hmm. I think actually going on a full on thing kind of changes things, which is why we can see a little bit more of a international response with Russia than we would with this. And especially because COVID's also slowing down in a lot of Western countries now.
Yeah. COVID infiltrates everything that we know. It's in every possible entity or event. It's something that is so universal, but has affected everything so differently. It's changed the political landscape for forever, I think.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, we've reached 2 years since the first official lockdown of the world, but Canada. That happened. I think the date that everyone goes off of is March 13th, which was mm-hmm. The Sunday before the show. Do you remember where you were when COVID hit or when everything kind of locked down?
I was actually in one of the most disappointed places in my life. Mm-hmm. I was a lawyer on a mock trial in high school. I was in grade 12. I was super excited. I'm like, we're going to go. And then it was March break. Like it was like a day before March break. So we were practicing, getting ready because our competition was right after March break. And then the government response was that they were increasing March break. And I was really happy. I'm like, another week
off.
In
yeah.
grade 12? Yes, this is what we need. I get to watch movies and then I never knew I was just going to be staying at home for the rest of the year.
Right. Yeah. I was in first year and I... was very fastly booted out of residence, went home and thought that I had like 3 weeks and exams online. And then we've been online ever since.
Definitely a start to a first year university.
Yeah.
Something you're looking forward to, I'm assuming, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely not what I was anticipating, but wouldn't change it for the world. Definitely grew from it. Learned a lot from it. But I mean, we're now seeing, how we said, there's a lot of different changes going on now with COVID, especially in Ontario. So we're moving on to our national issue. On March 1st, Doug Ford actually took away the vaccine mandate for public places such as restaurants, bars, gyms. No longer you needed to require a vaccination to go into or use these facilities. And now we're actually moving on to dropping the mask mandate. So starting March 21st, many of the settings in which Ontario residents have had to wear masks for the last 2 years, it will no longer be required. This includes businesses such as restaurants and gyms, but also includes schools. And that would be public schools, not necessarily private schools. They would have their own discretion on that. What are your thoughts, Rashid? What do you think?
I think it's definitely a very, very controversial issue. And there's definitely two sides to looking at this. But me having a younger sister, mm-hmm. I would definitely say I do not like the fact that they're removing the mask mandate. It's because not getting like people who decide to stand vaccinated, that's okay. That's their choice. Like, I don't think that they should be forced to do something they don't want to. But I think them kind of, I guess, risking the lives of a lot of other kids now with the no mask and everything, it's, I personally wouldn't be a fan of that just because I have a sibling who is in elementary school at the moment. And I don't like the fact that, like, I kind of like, I know COVID isn't like a thing that, like, if you get it, like, something instantly bad's going to happen to you. But I guess in terms of just her education safety, I'd prefer a more, like, I think the masks were fine. And, like, that's honestly, I guess, my view. What do you think?
Just to list another few places where you probably wouldn't think that you're allowed to remove your mask, but you are. So you're allowed to remove your mask in schools, restaurants, bars, grocery stores, banks, gyms, movie theaters, pharmacies, convenience stores, and libraries. But you will need to continue wearing a mask on public transit, hospitals, medical clinics, long-term care homes, and any other type of care settings, such as shelters and jails. What Premier Doug Ford said, according to Toronto CTV News, he said, quote, "It's going to be up to the people of Ontario. If you want to keep the mask on, keep it on." He continued by saying, "If you want to take it off, take it off. But we have to move forward from this. People are exhausted and poor kids in those classrooms too. Like, we got to move on," end quote. It's going to be interesting. I think a lot of people are going to continue to wear it for a while if it's a personal choice. I don't think you're going to be judged or criticized by wearing a mask inside. I don't think people would really blame you. For at least the next little while, I think that it's more of a precautionary tale. Yeah. I always say that masks are going to be our consistent reminder throughout like the next few decades or so of this pandemic, sort of like how TSA is the reminder of 9/11 for a lot of people a little bit older than us. Because that was something that wasn't there before, that was implemented to be a protection device that is smart, and why not continue to use it? I think the same goes for masks. Why not continue to use it? I don't think masks necessarily need to be part of our everyday moving forward. But as of right now, I would say I'm going to continue wearing my mask. Universities, though, have mandated that they're going to continue with the masks and mask mandates, but that is a private organization institution, so they have the right to digress that.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I think this is gonna turn out, I guess, a little awkward in my eyes, only because this can go one of two ways. This can either actually end up working, or this can end up leading to an increase in COVID cases, which is, like, with this variant that's going around, it's not that bad compared to the other ones, right? Which is why people are like, oh yeah, it's kind of like the flu and that's okay. But I also think that, like, now, like, if it's because, like, if in public schools every kid in the class doesn't decide to wear a mask or something, one of them gets it somehow anyhow, it's kind of the entire class is gone from there. And there's not.
Yeah, but isn't that the same with lice or chickenpox? And you got a note home that one kid had chickenpox, so the rest of the class had chickenpox. Or with lice, or I just think that it's hard to shift our mindset, because for majority of the last 2 years, we've been avoiding this, right? And it was, do not get this. Do not bring it home. Do not like, all we need is the vaccine. The vaccine's the solution. Then we got the vaccine. And then we had two more lockdowns. And it's like, okay, I'm avoiding this. I can't get this. And I think it's almost too widespread now that it's almost inevitable that majority is going to get sick. But I do hope that enough people are vaccinated that you won't get severely sick. Just from the global news here, the current fully vaccinated Canadian rate is almost 85%. It's 84.95% of Canadians past the age of five. And then 48.34% of Canadians past the age of five are boosted with the triple dose. So we're almost at herd immunity, which is 90%. But that's a huge number. That's a huge majority of Canadians that are vaccinated.
I think you're definitely right in that regard. Like, COVID, we've all viewed it so negatively that, like, this change, we might kind of digest it a little worse. But yeah, you're right. Especially with, like, chickenpox or lice. Yeah, like, these are still issues. And it happens to classes. And then they deal with it when it happens. Right. And I think, yeah, like, I think we do need to be a little optimistic looking right now. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, I guess, dwelling on how it started, I guess.
Right. And like, yeah, it continues to mutate, like you said, and it's mutated to be a less severe virus, not as it doesn't attack your lungs as severely as we, or your nervous system as it did once before. The Omicron variant anyway, in comparison to the other ones that we have seen. But one thing I do just want to ring home. I've seen a lot of people say, well, I know too many people getting vaccinated that are, you know, still getting sick. And without getting too politicized on the issue, I'm just going to say that vaccination is like it's not like a shield. It will not 100% guarantee that you will not get sick, but it is a superpower, and it does boost your immunity. And it does help you from the inside fight if you do get sick. So it's not going to prevent you from getting sick. It definitely prevents you from getting a lot sicker. So with that being said,
you a little stronger, gives you a fighting chance, right?
Absolutely. With that being said, if you're not vaccinated, get vaccinated already. And hopefully the mask mandate works out in our favor, and we can actually be over this in by year three.
Definitely. And I guess just move forward and let go of, I guess, what we've lost. Because in isolation, it's not just, I guess, education or something. I guess we kind of lost the social aspect. And especially as uni students who will love to talk, meet new people, I think it definitely took a hit, especially for our viewers. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that, like, if this mandate works out in our favor, then private institutions will also start enforcing it, and maybe we'll get something of a normal image of ourselves back together.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I know a lot of, like you said, people with young children are really against the no mask mandate. And also people that are immunocompromised that cannot get the vaccine are also very worried about the no mask mandate. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. But it does look like the Ontario government is going forward with limiting masking mandates. So we will see in the next 2 months how that plays out. So continue to stay on top of the news and look out for those restrictions being back on or off. And just be respectful going into institutions and businesses and things like that. A lot of them might still require you to wear a mask, and just understand their reasoning behind it. I think that it's, you know, it's still very new. So follow those rules as you will. Moving right along to our local topic. I wouldn't call it an issue. Our local topic is St. Patrick's Day. So we just wanted to, yay! We just wanted to talk to you guys briefly about what St. Patrick's Day is. I think a lot of people just chalk it up, students particularly, to a day of fun. But St. Patrick's Day has actually been around for a long time. So according to history.com, St. Patrick's Day is annually celebrated on March 17th, which is the day of St. Patrick's death. It is primarily an Irish or seen as an Irish and Christian holiday where families traditionally attend church and then celebrate later on in the afternoon. St. Patrick lived during the 5th century and is a patron saint of Ireland. He was born in Roman Britain, and then he was brought to Ireland at the age of 16. He is credited to bringing Christianity to the people of Ireland. Did you know any of that, Roshi?
I did not. Wow.
Yeah.
First year. Wow. They don't teach you this.
Yeah. It's actually been celebrated since the 9th or 10th century, St. Patrick's Day, to commemorate him. And there's usually St. Patrick's Day parades that are held. They're held quite often. And there's actually quite a big Irish and British community in the KW area. So KW actually has a St. Patrick's Day parade as well.
Okay, wow. Are you excited for that, Kelsey?
I usually don't attend the parade. Well, to be honest, I've only lived in Waterloo for the past 3 years, and that has been all COVID years. So I've missed St. Patrick's Day, but hopefully we don't miss it this year.
Definitely.
I know that Toronto also has a St. Patrick's Day parade. Let's see if I'm going to go ahead.
Definitely. And just for every listener out there, the university has told us, like, we're all going to have fun. Like, there is no stopping that, right? But just make sure you're all being safe, especially with this time. A lot of fights and things have broken through, or so I've heard so. And we just want to make sure everyone's safe and protected by the end of the day, right?
Yeah, the university is, condemns street gatherings or underage drinking and all that. So we know that. And it's also the Thursday is a school day. Classes and tutorials and labs will continue on that day. So make sure that you are attending those or not missing anything, getting notes. And just an update that the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Toronto will go ahead this year for 2020, and it will be on Sunday, March 20th, depending on Ontario's reopening plans, but that is apparently the go-ahead as of right now, which is exciting for GTA residents. Students, just be safe and celebrate accordingly. Rishi and I hope that you follow the safety tips that the Office of Student Affairs has sent out by email.
And more than anything, I know it's a good time partying. I definitely get that I'm in first year, but you want to make sure that you are also putting your academic needs for people who have midterms or anything before, I guess, the fun. But obviously, it is at your own discretion. But at the end of the day, you know, stay safe and have a great time, especially for all the first, second, and third years who've never had a St. Patty's Day, especially because of COVID.
Yeah. Just so everyone's aware, the campus security will be enhanced on St. Patrick's Day. They will be looking out for anyone who is inebriated or anyone that needs help. So make sure that we're being smart and safe. Also, parking will be restricted on Ezra and Bricker Street. So just make sure that you're not parking without a white permit on those streets or at University Stadium.
Yep.
Yeah. We wish you guys a happy St. Patrick's Day. Thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, my name is Kelsey Hickman.
I'm Rishi Gandhi.
And remember, your voice matters.